Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Who's Editing? The thought experiment in which my guest and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on us because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. I'm Siskoid, and I'll let you in on all the rules. But first, my guest with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who Update 87, number 4. It's his second time on the show, direct from down under Australia. Say hello to Brent Brighill. Hi, Brent.
Good morning. How are you? I guess it's good evening there, though.
Early evening for me, but, you know, people are listening at home at any given hour.
This is true.
You were last on with issue 21. We had a lot of fun with it.
We did.
And you asked to be back on this update sequence. Did it feel different for you, just like this batch of characters, like later characters?
Well, it did, because I think I originally sort of contacted you to say, oh, I really hope you can bring the show back. And my idea was re-editing. But as you're only picking up characters that are new, it was a bit difficult because I thought, oh, this would be really good if they're the really well-known characters and they're the revised. But you don't do the revisions. So it was a bit trickier than I thought, because there were some obscure characters created sort of post 1980, you know, 84, 85. They were harder than I thought, but I got there in the end.
Yeah, there are a couple of them that are older than, you know, they were forgotten in the first batch. The Protector and so on.
Yeah.
Phantom of the Fair in a way. But you're right. I had trouble with it as well. I think this issue is probably the most obscure or least used, or once you take out the revisions, especially.
Yeah.
But even with the revisions, it's not an A-list group.
No, it's not. Between L and R was a bit tricky.
Did we have challenges other than that? Spoiler, folks, it's going to begin with Lords of the Ultra Realm, okay? Which was just such a foreign concept to me. I never read it. It's not within DC continuity. Because it came up first, I wanted to hang everything on that. And then I just couldn't come up with anything until very late, only a few days ago, really. So we'll talk about my strategy a bit later, but I don't know. Maybe I gave myself to, like, I should maybe have started from the back rather than the front. But I like to just sit down and do it all in one go, practically in page order. And the first one was just so hard. So that was my personal challenge with this. What about you?
My whole line probably hangs a bit on that one as well, actually. And because it's a double page spread, the Lords of the Ultra Realm, I've probably gone into a bit more length in that one because there was a bit to cover. But yeah, that was hard. I also found Karak really hard. So I'm really not sure how I'm going to link this in, but I got there in the end.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And there's like a number of locations as well in the book. It's like, these aren't easy books to make. So let me tell the folks what the rules are for each episode of Who's Editing and maybe their first episode. Our line of books must include a monthly series for every hero, character, or team featured, as well as any location, if and only if they didn't already get an entry in the main volume and therefore coverage on this show. But one of these revised entries can be added to our roster at the end, and we can also give a villain or other entry their own series if we absolutely feel the need to, but we can only name a single villain slash entry from the issue to receive that honor. So imagine we're coming back from some crisis or other. We can reboot characters. We can use any continuities version. It's up to us what we do. Titles don't even have to match the entries. And note that myself and Brent are each pitching our own ideas, and so we'll end up with two possible lines of books. And listeners, you decide which books you'd actually want to read, and we'll actually play that game too. We'll give each other enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line, and we'll reveal that at the end. Obviously, we haven't heard each other's ideas yet, so we have to take notes here. Let me get a piece of paper. All right. So tell me, did you have a strategy going into this?
Well, I kind of did. Definitely, there's been a crisis. My whole line is set in the future, let's say, but not the far future, okay. a post-crisis future. So yeah, that kind of tied it all together. I think Power Girl was one of the ones that kind of kicked me off with the thinking. We'll sort of see where I go with her when we get to her.
Okay. We always like Power Girl. Myself, like I said earlier, it all hangs on the Lords of the Ultra Realm. But after that, I'd say it's mostly a pretty mainstream bunch of books that is affected by Ultra Realm. Although I would say frequently on the darker side of the DCU in this case. And it all makes sense. You'll see. So with issue 4 of Who's Who Update 87, we have to include a minimum of 10 books in our line, and that's a maximum of 12. I'm going to hand it off to you first, and then we'll do a bit of back and forth in entry order, keeping our two bonus entries for the end, if we have one. And yes, we start, sorry, folks, we start with Lords of the Ultra Realm. You said yours was a bit lengthy, and so will mine be.
Well, it kind of has to be. There's a lot of characters in the Lords of the Ultra Realm. So,
all depending what you do with it, yeah.
Okay, well, let's see if we've done the same thing with it, because my book is going to be called Ladies of the Ultra Realms, and it's set about 75 years after World War III. In this world, nature has taken back the Earth from the AI dictators. The climate's more tropical, and all the cities and infrastructure have been destroyed, so plants and animals are taking back the planet. The surviving humans are scattered to the far reaches, trying to survive in small tribes and collectives. Two powerful forces have emerged, light and dark. With nature resurging, so too have the forces of these feminine ultra realms. While computers and electronics don't work in this age, magic does. Pixies are emerging in the forests, the wraiths in the swamps. And only in this less industrialized and electronic world could the ladies of the ultra realms reemerge. The seven ladies of light have started to establish the light lands, and the ladies of darkness, the dark lands. Now, I need to go through the ladies, Cisco.
Okay.
Very similar names to the Lords of Ultra Realm. So the first one is the Lady of Life. And the Lady of Life is Tefe Holland of the Louisiana Swamplands. And she's partnered with her opposite side, the Lady of Death, who is Talia al Ghul of the Gotham Groves. And then we've got the Lady of Love, Star Sapphire of Coast City Reef, the Lady of Hate, Lady Circe of the Dark Woods on Paradise Island. We've got the Lady of Bliss, who is Beautiful Dreamer of Venice Beach Jungle, Lady of Rage, Tashana, Lady Quark of Kurak, Forestland. We've got the Lady of Peace, Diana of Themyscira Grasslands, the Lady of War, Grail of the Washington Woodlands, the Lady of Order, Inza Nelson of Salem Grove, Lady of Chaos, Dark Raven of the New York Marshlands, the Lady of Enlightenment, Rama Krishna of the Nanda Parbat Wilderness, the Lady of Madness, Rose Forest of Metropolis Woods, and Lady Grace, Amy Winston of the Hudson Hinterlands, and Amethyst of Gemworld. And finally, we've got Lady of Greed, Pamela Isley of Gotham Groves. What hope do the humans have as not only nature takes the world back over, but these immortal ladies build their networks of power, each with their local agents competing for control of their own dominion and that of their collective ultra realms. With this book, think Planet of the Apes meets Kingdoms of Gemworld meets Why the Last Man meets Game of Thrones.
It's an alternate great disaster.
Yeah, we've got some key DC characters who are still alive at this time. Somehow they've survived through their magical energies. Where did you go with this one?
Similar in a way, because you use named DC characters in the roles of the people who are fighting the Ultra Realm battle. And I did that as well. Mine is a more subtle influence on the other books, let's say. This thing is actually a maxi-series event called Challenge of the Ultra Realm. Sort of went with a Challenge of the Super Friends, nice, kind of naming, maybe. It shunts the Justice League and the Legion of Doom into the Ultra Realm, as described in this entry, and gives each of the 14 characters a role or a lordship, or a ladyship, depending, right? So Superman is life, Luthor is death, Wonder Woman is love, Cheetah is hate, Martian Manhunter is bliss. I know that's a weird one. Mm-hmm. I didn't change the whatever the avatars. Solomon Grundy is rage. Aquaman is peace. Black Manta is war. Green Lantern is order. Sinestro is chaos. Batman is enlightenment, which makes Joker madness. And then Flash is grace. Captain Cold is greed. So I'm trying to keep to the cartoon people except for the Martian Manhunter. Mm-hmm. So they battle it out, and their victories or failures affect the real world. Each of the 14 issues of the series will be titled after one of the principles the characters are avatars of. And that month, that principle may be affected in some of the mainline books, but mostly in one, which I can only really reveal near the end of the episode. So that's one publication year where these 14 characters aren't in the main books. They've been shunted off, right? Mm. So you won't see Superman in the main line of books. So some of their series will be telling tales from before or after. Some will be put on hiatus and replaced with a series I'm going to talk about today. Some will star alternate heroes from Who's Who Update 87, actually. Mm. So you might imagine Power Girl in Action Comics or The Question in Detective Comics. I'm not really going to go into these details. They're not necessarily my selected bonus entries. Nevertheless, that's kind of what we're doing. And you'll see how it sometimes shows up in my other books as we go. But not the next two, because they don't take place in the contemporary era, at least in my case. All will be revealed.
I like what you've done there, Cisco. There was a bunch of lame characters in this book, so you've brought in the Big Seven, basically.
Yeah, they're in here as well. Yeah, we made sure they'd be in here. But as far as the books that are not affected by this war of concepts, we start with Mentalla. And I'll go first here. Mentalla, it's a Legion of Superheroes character who he or she will star in a Fatal Five series. And she's its newest member. She's undercover, of course, just like in the original history. It is the original history, really. And the series flashes back frequently to her training on Titan and her Legion tryouts and her short stay at Legion Academy, just as background for her self-given mission to infiltrate the Fatal Five and screw up their crimes. In the comics, we see her try out. The next thing you know, she seems to have turned bad, but it's to betray the Fatal Five, and bam, she's killed. So this series extends all of that, following the supervillains on many crimes before they ever attack the Legion, and showing how Mentalla uses her mental tricks to stop those crimes from within. So if this is successful, the reader will come to love her and dread that moment that must come where she's needlessly sacrificed at the end of this paranoid thriller. But it's sort of like a side story of the Legion.
I like what you've done there. I like that idea that we kind of know what's going to end the series, but she's got no idea. And nice to fill in a little gap. My Mentalla series has nothing to do with the Legion of Superheroes, which is surprising for me, Siskoid, but I didn't go there. My Mentalla is the great-great-niece of a powerful telepath called Lilith, and she journeys along the old roads in this future with the traveling fair, which brings entertainment to the scattered tribes. Her home is an old gypsy wagon. When the fair arrives in a village, they circle their wagons and Mentalla hangs out her fortune teller sign and tells your future in exchange for food or other precious resources. What no one knows, though, is that she's secretly stealing secrets from her customers as she reads their minds. People leave happy if she's always able to convince them using their own facts from their own memories. So they're happy, but in the meantime, she's stealing their secrets. Mentalla enjoys her days with the fair people. Her favorites amongst the fair people are Dibny, the elastic lad, Grayson, the tightrope walker, Muse, the poet, Magpie, who is a sleight of hand artist, Looker, the world's most beautiful vampire, and her favorites, the world's smallest brothers.
You also fit in a few characters from this issue.
Well, yeah, I couldn't use all the revised ones and the villains, but I thought I'll just slip them in there somewhere.
Yeah, on the sly. Yeah. You know, I love any story where Dick Grayson is going to be working at a circus. Something appeals to me about that notion.
Yeah, slight twist, tightrope rather than trapeze. But anyway.
Right, well, you can do it all. All right, well, next up is... we once again go outside the DC Universe proper, although it's all been connected now through Doomsday Clock. It's the Minutemen, the precursors to the Watchmen in the comics. I imagine these are Minutemen living in your, I'm calling it a great disaster.
Well, yeah, it's a bit like a great disaster, sort of post-AI world.
Kind of sounds like insulting the comics. Yeah, your line is a great disaster.
Exactly.
They probably wouldn't do that for marketing reasons.
Indeed.
But yeah, well, what do you do with the Minutemen?
Well, they're not the Minutemen. They're the Minute Men. And their names are Al, Ray, Paul, and Ryan Choi. They're the grandsons of the original Ryan Choi, and they've inherited the powers of the Atom, sort of. They can shrink for their normal heights to a height of about 13 inches. Al is the eldest. He likes roughhousing his brothers. Ray's the clever one and is faithful to his yellow-skinned wife, Lithwen. Paul did not make such good choices, marrying a woman who turned out to be in love with Ray. It didn't end well. And Ryan is always getting the brothers in trouble with people from the towns they are visiting as he uses his diminutive form to pilfer items that the carnies need.
I love the Atom. I'm one of those people.
There's lots of Atom references in there, as you probably picked up.
Yeah. Yep. Like I said, this isn't a contemporary series for me, so we're going back to World War II. I mean, the controversy here is that Alan Moore was apparently promised his Watchmen stuff wouldn't be used by DC, and then they plainly went against that promise. So I don't want to repeat that mistake. I don't want to get into that hot water with the before Watchmen, you know, kerfuffle. My idea is to trade on the fact that the Watchmen were based on the Charlton stable of heroes. Mm-hmm. So the new Minutemen, whose adventures are set just post-war, post-JSA, basically in the McCarthyist 1950s, are either Charlton heroes or Charlton precursors. So Judo Master and Tiger survived the war. They're in here. Dan Garrett, Blue Beetle, was a Golden Age hero, so he's here as well. The rest have to be, I guess, new characters, like the Golden Age Captain Atom called Atom Bob, a different non-powered Nightshade, Peacemaker's racist dad, a Golden Age Question. Maybe we even relicense Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt. Who knows? While the JSA wouldn't name names, these guys are government licensed. They're transparent, except they really aren't. They're all hiding something. So the tone would still very much be what Moore did with them. And I'd want an artist who can do noir to give this the appropriate grit and the shadows, despite the colorful costumes. So I'm having my cake and eating it too.
Very nice.
Mr. Bones. We're staying on the dark side of the DC Universe. With Mr. Bones, it's called Bones of the DEO. It eschews the costume era for the character. Sorry, Todd McFarlane. He's not going to be wearing this. No, he's just going to be in a business suit. I think that's fair. And he's running the Department of Extranormal Operations and having to deal with the Justice League's absence. This is kind of why it's a darker world, right? Mm. So there's enormous pressure on the key DC Universe cities, Metropolis, Gotham, Coast City, etc., without their municipal heroes, and the world in general also. And he calls in all sorts of favors, makes all kinds of threats to get the remaining heroes and probably villains to play ball, drop what they're doing, go on missions for him. At first, a lot of heroes want to be helpful, and they might start to notice he cares about certain things and not others. Maybe he has a secret agenda. What skeletons are hidden in his closet? Let's put that on the cover of the first issue. Spy thriller, almost, with superheroes. Kind of a Suicide Squad type stuff.
I'm a bit of an Infinity Inc. fan, and I was at that time a Todd McFarlane fan, because I thought his design stuff was cool. But look, mine's linked to Infinity Inc., but it's not, obviously, because we're well in the future. So Mr. Bones is the name of the series, and he is a shaman who leads the Holy Woods Hills tribe outside the ruins of an abandoned city called Los Angeles. He's a mysterious figure who runs his tribe through superstition and mysticism. When the tribe's people come to him for help, he lights a cigarette, leans back, and throws his bones. Mr. Bones dresses wearing voodoo-like robes and hides his face from those who step into his hut. Behind him on a stake is a skull, rumored to have been found in the ruins of what was once a film lot called Stellar Studios. Visitors should be wary because touching the skull is rumored to be like touching cyanide. His predictions are usually invented, and if followed, often lead the asker into even greater peril. Mr. Bones' young prodigy, Mentalla, ran off and joined a traveling fair which passed through town. This infuriated him, robbing Bones of her mind-reading powers.
A lot of carnival atmosphere.
Well, I kind of needed to build a carnival in somewhere, right? Because we're getting there.
Moonbow is our next character, and she could also be in a carnival. What have you done with her?
My book is not called Moonbow, so my book is called Moonbow Tribe. When the mechanical weapons stopped working and most of the superpowered humans were dead, survivor Connor Hawke gathered the remaining citizens of Star City and fled into the night, taking only a few supplies and bows. They found a yacht and sailed out into the night, guided only by moonlight. The moonlight led them to an overgrown mountainous island off the coast of Bermuda, dotted with temples and arenas. Needless to say, it was no longer a paradise island. They formed a clan called the Moonbow Tribe, set up home on the island, taking the east side of the island in amongst the ruins. It proved to provide them with plenty of food and a time of calm. Teaching the escapees to hunt and fish, Connor managed to save them all, except for Dinah Drake, who he buried in a grave marked only by a green arrow. As the years went by, eventually he was entombed beside her by the Moonbow tribe, who are now some of the fiercest fighters you can imagine. The Lady of Hate, Cersei, rules much of the dark woods of the west of the island, and Rampage rules the east. Cersei has somehow, by opening a large round mystical oak doorway, freed an evil even greater than herself. The horrors have started to emerge. That's where our opening issue ends.
To show people what's behind the curtain, I had originally mistakenly put Paradise Island not as a revised. You wanted to use it, and of course, this is how it fits in.
I have a few books set on Paradise Island, so Moonbow Tribe's just one of them. Yeah.
With Moonbow, I I almost sent Green Arrow to the Ultra Realm instead of John Jones, just so she could take over. But that's not what I did. Bree Brandon is a drama student actually on an archery scholarship who, when invited to create a role for improv class, takes inspiration. I say improv class. I mean, in dramatic arts, they do have improvisation classes. I don't mean that she was going to improv workshops. So they do ask you to do that, to like create a character and build on it, etc. These are sort of exercises that they do. So for that role, she takes inspiration from Robin Hood and modern superheroes, and she creates Moonbow. And she goes too far. She creates a costume, a hairstyle, a special makeup, and to be method, she goes out on patrol. And she didn't expect to actually stop a crime. But from then on, once it happens, the thrill is just too enticing and Moonbow must ride again. So this is supposed to be a fun series in Amid All the Darkness, with lots of campus life, seeing Bree rehearse for the class play, get in trouble with teachers, and as a total rookie who is faking it, makes a lot of mistakes on the streets. And because of my own, I didn't mean to trash improv earlier, because my own background is as an improv person. I also want to make her an improv performer. So she would also be doing that and have her get out of trouble using those skills, bring a lot of humor to her banter, that sort of thing. The Muse was like on the next page, I think would be her arch enemy. He also got a theatrical origin. So we'll have him in here as a villain. But Mikado and Mind Dancer, they all look like theater kids to me too. So it's probably a good mix there. You know, this is a series I'd personally be writing probably.
It looks like we both brought in some of the other characters for this book, Cisco.
It's always fun to do that, right? Next up is New Atlantis. And I got to tell you, having no interest at all in this Arion Skartaris stuff, New Atlantis is the series in my line that replaces Aquaman for a year. Arthur is gone to the Ultra Realm, and Ocean Master has quickly moved in and transformed society, keeping control through science and magic. Our leads are water-breathing freedom fighters, usually just Aquaman supporting cast, Tempest, Aqualad, the new Aquagirl, Dolphin, maybe a ruthless ally like the Marine Marauder from this issue, Mera, of course. But I think Mera actually would be held hostage in the palace. So she has to play nice with Orm, but is betraying him to the rebels. So we get like a year of, you know, insurrection type thing going on in the underwater realms of Atlantis. So it's a new Atlantis, but it's not this new Atlantis.
How interesting. Well, I have an Atlantis connection from the Atlan series, but it's not this one. My new Atlantis is, the book is called New Atlantis, Georgia. The city once called Atlanta somehow managed to survive the mystical EMPs that took out all the AIs and most of the complex mechanical and electrical devices. It is a strange reminder on Earth of the way life once was. The city is now powered by wind, solar power, and geothermal energy, and it's the only metropolis left on the planet. It has only one problem, that it is overflowing with people trying to get in. Will the mystic barrier created by the amulet of Orion hold against the ladies of the Ultra Realms? And will 500,000 citizens survive? Somehow, the metagene is still active in the city. And as new children are born, superpowered beings are returning. I thought, let's have a city survive.
Yeah, it's nice. I like the Atlantis. It's a fun bit.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Phantom of the Fair. For those who don't know, the Phantom of the Fair is the oldest character in this issue. But he used to exist as a character in another company's line of books. I think it was Centaur Comics that maybe had the Phantom of the Fair, but the Phantom of the Fair eventually showed up in Secret Origins and a little bit and maybe in All-Star Squadron at the time. But it was like Roy Thomas taking a character who was in the public domain and bringing him back, changing the spelling on Phantom. It was an F in those original stories, but he looks exactly the same as that other Phantom. So to me, this was going to be like, okay, this is the Golden Age character, the oldest character in here, but also the most obscure. So I guess my question is, did this guy speak to you? Did this guy inspire you somehow?
He was a bit of a tricky one, wasn't he? I think the name was the tricky part. So you can see why I've got a traveling fair. You can imagine where I went with this one. The book is called Phantom of the Fair. It's about the following. While everyone knows about the traveling fair, the Phantom is a mystery. No one has ever really seen him. Only evidence shows he was there. Sometimes he leaves a bowl of fruit for the carnies. Other times he protects them from marauders. Dibney swears he once saw him lifting one of the wagons out of a bog, so he must possess incredible strength. The readers know who the Phantom is, but the travelling troupe never get to see him. Will his secret be revealed? why does he carry opera binoculars and a photo of the All-Star Squadron in front of the perisphere? So he's a mystery. He's a mystery. And this book's going to be a mystery book. You know, will he get away undetected? Why is he hiding? Obviously, we're going to know a bit as readers that the characters don't know. So he's going to interact very much with the Mentala book.
Oh, yes. Again, a carnival, the fair, right?
Absolutely.
And I had the same problem. I need a fair. I mean, I need a fair in 2025. So basically what I did is that one of those billionaire futurists we hate, or their DCU equivalent, maybe like Simon Stagg, has created a futuristic city, a new world's fair. And of course, he's displaced a lot of normal people to do it, snookering them into giving up their homes, forcing them to either move away or to stay as underpaid servants or, you know, working at the fair in the city, in the utopia. He poisoned their farmland beyond, etc. You know, it's really a disaster. The city both forces the poor into transience and then hunts them down using electrobots. It's that kind of utopia. The top 1% watch from their lavish hotels and they take bets. One hero rises up. Of course, it's the Phantom of the Fair. No one knows who he is, though a fair play pun, making him Mr. Terrific could be fun. I'm not saying that's what it is, but that was one idea I had. He's all stacked down or whatever has. Same as you. I mean, this character evokes that. Like, who the hell is he? That's also true metatextually. Like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
He's not really a DC character, is he? He wasn't. So that mystery carries over in both your book and mine. It just felt natural.
Well, I don't think Roy Thomas ever revealed who he was either. So he left it a mystery too.
We'll never know. Next up is the Protector, who is the character that Robin was supposed to be in this PSA comic about drugs with the rest of the Titans, but Robin was licensed differently, of course, from the other heroes. So they put in the Protector instead. It was basically somebody you can draw over Robin. So in my case, it's Tim Drake. He's been looking for a role in the Batman family ever since Damian usurped his role as the big name Robin. So he's the Protector with a costume a little more in his tones, say black and red. It's not going to be this garish thing. Fighting a one-team war on drug dealers in Gotham City. Everyone has to pick up the slack in Gotham with Batman gone. And that's his specific role. So that might sound mundane, but drugs in Gotham, they evoke things like Bane's Venom and characters like Amygdala. Plenty for a teen wonder to do without Master Bruce as a backup.
I like it. My new Protector, he's called New Protector. Obviously, we're in the future. He's called Logan Hart, and he's the champion of New Atlantis. He's the first Superman-level powered being born into the new age. Oh. The Protector has made it his mission to protect New Atlantis from the ladies of the Ultra Realms, particularly the Dark Ones. New Protector has all the powers of a superhuman, and this is a rarity in this new age. He heads up the Titans of New Atlantis, a metahuman team which includes Peacemaker 3, Halo, an immortal being whose auras grant her superpowers, and Question, the great-grandson of the Riddler. New Protector needs to build the team quickly because the mystical barrier around New Atlantis is periodically failing, and what waits on its borders threatens to consume the last vestiges of hope. Also, outside, however, are the Ladies of Light, so not all hope is lost. So he's going to interact with the Ladies of Light and the Ladies of Dark and this city of New Atlantis.
He's essentially your Superman in this.
He's my Superman. I was like, let's have someone. I struggled with what to do with him. And I'm like, who is this PSA comic? It's like, there was not a lot to go with. So I think your idea was good too.
So next up is Kurak, a fictional Middle Eastern country that eats up a part of Saudi Arabia, eats Kuwait, it eats Bahrain. There's a bunch of, you can see from the map, it's like eating other countries. But you mentioned it in your Ultra Realms.
I did.
Description. So what happened?
Okay,
there?
So in all of these Ultra Realms, the forests are coming back. So Kurak is now wooded. My book's not called Kurak, though. My book's called The Battle for Kurak, One Shot. Lady of Rage, Lady Quark, found herself in a place in the Middle East with a name similar to her own, Kurak. Returning to Earth to witness the birth of AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, she was aghast as she saw the billionaire community using their scientific base in Kurak to create artificial superintelligence by using Batman's Brother Eye technology coupled with Brainiac's ship. Having seen her own world consumed by one mad pariah's experiment, she could contain herself no longer. To save humanity, she recruited Zatanna, the White Lantern and Larissa Malor from the LEGION and flew to Karak. She summoned all her Quark energy, coupled with Zatanna's magic, the White Lantern's power, and Larissa's shadows, to eliminate the AI threat with a mystical EMP. In this case, it's an electromystical pulse. Unfortunately, Zatanna's spell combined with the magic nature of the Shadow Force and the Life Force and the power of Quark did not quite go the way Lady Quark had intended. The base was destroyed, but a wave of light and dark mystical energy spread out across the globe, powered by her rage. It killed the Lantern, Zatanna, and Larissa. As it spread, it destroyed technology everywhere. First to be hit were the heroes powered by the Metagene, then the aliens. Booster Gold's flight ring failed in mid-flight. Dams overflowed. TV broadcasts stopped mid-sentence. The internet went down and every plane and chopper fell from the sky. Cars suddenly stopped. Guns jammed. The Batboat crashed, taking out the four main members of the Bat family. Computers went dark. Lights went out all over the globe. The four astronauts and two cosmonauts in the International Space Station watched the whole world go dark. Theirs was the only technology still working, with no way to contact the Earth. The ensuing 50 years were chaos, and the next 25 even worse. Lady Quark still sits like a glowing statue alone on a chair in the empty scientist space, repeating the word pariah over and over.
That damn pariah. So this is like Ultra Realms Origins.
This is the setup book.
Yeah, this sets you up for the rest of the event, or, you know, the whole
exactly.
line. Yeah, one of the things I'm learning about our techniques for this is like when the heroes, where the characters are rather lame, we suddenly put a lot of other characters in the books.
Yes.
I did the same. I mean, my Karak book is maybe this one could be controversial. So with Earth's greatest heroes gone, President Marlowe of Karak wants to make a push with his country and take over the Middle East to make himself rich through oil is basically his plan. He means to use the jihad to do this. But they're true believers, each a superpowered terrorist devoted to their cause. It's not about money, and they're on to him. Disavowed and marked for death when they refuse his orders, they go underground and become revolutionaries within Karak, helped by such Suicide Squad alumni as Bronze Tiger and Duchess. Their role is kind of like Kira's and Garrick's at the tail end of Deep Space Nine, for those who know, showing former enemies how to fight a common foe. So this is a dark, bloody, treacherous series. I think Black Adam probably guest stars at some point, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's that kind of book.
Yeah.
Definitely. And wasn't Black Adam in this update, or is he in the next one? Anyways, regardless, he's an update character, so I'll have him in here as well. All right. Next up is Rampage. And I resisted as long as I could, but I finally gave in. This is a woman who hulks out, created and drawn by John Byrne. Okay, so she's a She-Hulk stand-in in the DC Universe. At least that's what I'm doing with her. Kitty Faulkner opens a window into Earth Prime at Star Labs, and from then on, is aware of the readers, like Ambush Bug, like Deadpool, like Animal Man on peyote, like She-Hulk. We give it a crazy scientific rationale, essentially, but it's that power. In Superman's absence, Rampage is one of Metropolis's defenders, and she gets all the weirdest crap, a lot of it created by disgraced Star Labs employees that she takes it upon herself to deal with. And when I say weird, I mean stuff taken from Silver and Bronze Age Superman stories. There's plenty of Metropolis lore to use here. There's a lot of weird. But I'm basically just doing John Byrne She-Hulk book in the DC Universe in 2025.
Well, I went in a different direction. So my book's just called Rampage with an exclamation mark. This book is set in the Darklands on Paradise Island, and exiles from Gorilla City have established a violent new community there. As with most gorilla bands, one silverback emerges as leader, dominating all the others. Rampage, descended from both Grodd and Solovar, is bigger, smarter, and stronger than all the others. His temper, however, comes from Grodd's lineage, and he's taken out several hapless members of the Moonbow tribe, who unfortunately wandered into the dark woods. I've actually picked an artist for this book because I think Gary Frank would be perfect for this book. He draws fantastic animals. I don't know if you've read Geiger, but his gorilla would look fantastic. So Rampage likes to roam by himself, and he finds a large circular oak door left ajar by Circe, the Lady of Hate. when these two meet, will they battle or will they need to unite against the dark forces below Paradise Island?
It's a surprise. I mean, I wasn't expecting, because I thought, okay, we've got a Paradise Island. You mentioned Rampage already. I thought, okay, yes, great. She's like an Amazon figure, right? Because I almost made her some sort of barbarian on another planet or dimension. Was one of my ideas, so I thought that's where you were going, but I was definitely not expecting Gorilla
DC City. Likes gorilla books. Come on, we need a gorilla book in the line.
It's a tradition. All right, well, that she's on the last page. This is page 32, which means we're up to our bonus books, and we start with the revised entry. We could pick Lois Lane, Mon-El, the Olympian Gods, the Outsiders, Peacemaker, Power Girl, Paradise Island, and The Question. Those are all revised entries that we could pick from. Which one did you pick?
Well, I picked Power Girl, which, you know, I was tempted by Mon-El, but I didn't really know where I could go with it in this world. So, no, I picked Power Girl. My book is called The Power Girl. Kara Zor-El from the city of New Atlantis is a descendant of Orion of Atlantis. She found her strength and power of flight was lessened by Quark's EMP, but not totally gone. Power Girl, dressed in denim overalls with her blonde hair concealed under a scarf, sets about restoring power to the neighboring towns and cities. Power Girl can counter the damage caused by the effects of the mystical EMP with her Amulet of Orion, which she keeps hidden in her tool belt. This gemstone itself is a piece of the fabled negative gemstone of Darkworld, and as such possesses the magical energy of the Darkworld dimension, which was created from a fragment of the Great Darkness. The magic within the Dark World dimension acquired a reputation for its unpredictable and uncontrollable nature. Kara constructed the mystical barrier around New Atlantis as she left, but it seems to be failing. The amulet can also grant the wearer an expression of Dark World's magic known as the Mystic Eye, which Kara uses to foresee dangers. Kara travels the areas around New Atlantis, Georgia, resetting power plants, building solar panels, and training recruits to service and protect them from the Dark Tribes. She gives them vehicles that work, but is reluctant to give them the old weapons, even though she could. She's keen to keep her identity secret, along with the fact that she was once a member of the JSA. She avoids making friends, but is around to support her helpers, the Power Company, when they need her. Think of a traveling Rosie the Riveter with an environmental magical flair.
I like that elevator pitch. And who doesn't love Power Girl? I mean,
exactly.
My choice. And people who know me are going to be shocked. Shocked, I say. I mean, even to my surprise, I've chosen The Outsiders.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a well-known hater of Outsiders, a mocker of Outsiders. Anyways, nevertheless, this was the one that I needed to make everything else work. So basically, they move into the Justice League satellite. They step up in the League's absence. They become the Justice League of their year. And this series directly connects to Challenge of the Ultra Realm, with each issue having the same title as the event series every month. And the heroes have to deal with the abundance or absence of the principle in question. Whatever's happening in that book, they have to deal with war being out of control, love being out of control, or bliss being absent, or, you know, whichever side those battles go, madness, etc. And yes, on Death, which would be one of the last issues, we get to kill one of them off. So, you know, I vote for Looker or Geo-Force, but...
Well, Looker's already dead, so it's good.
Well, we can destroy her permanently, stake through the heart. In any case, I'm being facetious here, but basically, they won't have Batman on hand, but it's their chance to be the heroes of that year, a bit like the Teen Titans when the Justice League closed up shop a couple years back, and they gave the Teen Titans the new Titans, that role. Here it's the Outsiders, except they're really, really not equipped and really struggling and desperate to save people from the exact effects of the Ultra Realm story. So I think this would make them more interesting as a result.
Very nice. I like the way you hooked all that back as well.
And finally, we could have a villain series. And there aren't that many villains in this, I gotta say, or I've used them in other roles. Mad Men is the one that I chose.
Okay.
Because I'm a big fan. They're a favorite from the old Charlton Blue Beetle issue that I had. It was actually a Modern Comics reprint, but nevertheless, this is like an early comic that I found in a flea market, I think, somewhere. Here I'm going to make him a hero. This also ties into the Ultra Realm. As Avatar of Madness, the Joker is having a huge effect on Earth. And there's a rash of clownish crimes. The clownish villains get really amped up. People like the Trickster, the Prankster, Toyman, Harlequin's Son, Punchin' Julie. And there are plenty of new ones. So one man touched by that same madness actually turns to heroism. Madman.
That could be copyright, that one, yeah.
Yeah. He's a super acrobatic creeper type. He's just a normal office drone during the day, but he has blackouts during which he's dealing with the madness. So he's the hero who doesn't even know he's a superhero. To his mind, he's just a normal guy. And then, you know, like he blacks out for whatever reason. So that's what I'm doing as my quote unquote villain comic. Did you pick one? It's optional, obviously.
You could throw Muse into that series, I reckon, as well. He'd fit well. I would, very similar to you, had used all the villains within my other books. So I decided not to have a villain series. Like they could spin out of something later, but I didn't actually pitch a book for a villain series.
I feel like the people's heroes might have been something, you know, like, I don't know, have superheroes in Russia or something, but
yeah,
we do what we can within the concepts that we first birth. So if this is the end, then we follow with the now well-established tradition that states we have only enough money to buy one book from the other editor's line. And which one will it be, Brent?
Well, I liked a couple of your books. I really liked your new Protector book. I kind of like the one teen war against drugs idea. But I'm actually going to go with your New Atlantis book. I like the idea of a year without Aquaman. I thought that was a nice little run, the year that DC took the Trinity off the table. So I think I'd really like to see what happens in this New Atlantis that's been overtaken by the villains, and where the heroes go with that, you know, whether Aquaman comes back at the end of the year.
For me, like the front runner for a long time was the Minute Men. Because of the Adam references, because there's such an outrageous pun in the title, I knew it was like whatever writer is not going to take it too seriously and have a lot of fun. But you won me over with the Power Girl.
Mm.
That's the series that I would want to read.
Yeah, it was kind of, that was my Why the Last Man kind of series, that she's wandering around on a mission. And, you know, very much like that, what's that line of DC books that has them all sort of in that sort of Rosie the Riveter sort of look? Do you know the ones? I mean, it'd have that sort of vibe. We've got all those sort of 1950s versions of the characters. So it'd be sort of set in that sort of, it's post-apocalyptic, but it feels a bit like the 50s.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, that's it, dear listeners. It's time for you to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? And if you were in charge, what would you offer using these characters? And if you like this content, of course, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FWPodcasts, like Diablo Frank and Doug Adamson, who sponsor this very show. I hope you had fun, Brett, on your second go.
I certainly did. It was a lot harder than the first one, but I enjoyed it a lot.
It's only getting harder. Now-
Yeah, these updates are harder, that's for sure.
Still, thanks for trying the experiment with me. And until next time, who's editing?
We are.
Women don't warm to that character initially,
exactly,
because
of
the window, the boob window, and the. So when we did the book, we tried to kind of give her a home and a job and a personality and friends and a sort of a tight-knit family in a way.